David, let's start with the problem with prions. What is it and how bad is it?
Well, most of the public has heard now of mad cow disease. Mad cow disease, or bovine spongiform encephalopathy, if you want the long name, or BSE, is a disease attributed to a prion, which is a small protein. It's actually a protein that would naturally occur in a mammal, for example, like a cow, but the protein gets misfolded somehow, and they're not quite sure of the science on how that initiation event happens. But basically, that misfolded protein acts like a catalyst to misfold other proteins like itself. So two things happen is it takes proteins out of circulation and misfolds them so they start to build up. And at the same time, that triggers the host to make more of that protein, so you end up getting a compounding problem. They are proteins that are naturally occurring in the body, so the body doesn't necessarily break them down all that well. And eventually you end up with these inclusion bodies or these big clusters of the protein in the brain, and it ends up making the brain go a little bit like a, they call it spongiform, which literally means like a sponge or having these big cavities where the proteins have built up. With that comes all kinds of neurological problems and clinical symptoms. And so the problem was that they've discovered or linked scientifically that if a cow gets mad cow disease, it can be linked to other cows. It's contagious. And not only that, if people eat the prions, there is some now ties to the human forms of the disease. And so if you go back in the history of Canada, there's been about 17 cases of mad cow disease, I think is the latest number. But most of it was a spike back in the last decade. The reason it became a problem is the prior practice was during rendering, which is the process of taking the part of the cow that doesn't become meat, for all intents and purposes, and trying to recover the protein for other uses, protein and oils and fats. The protein would have some contaminant in it. So if you processed 100,000 cows and one was infected, you'd infect that batch. For a time, that protein was used for animal feed inclusion. So you created a vicious cycle where you were feeding cow parts back to cows, which infected other cows. And so in England, they had a massive problem with BSE. In Canada, we were already starting to prepare, but we did have some of those procedures. So what happened is when we first had our cases of mad cow disease, one of the steps the Canadian Food Inspection Agency took was to ban and outlaw the inclusion of cow parts into animal feed. So that was a big important step. But what it meant was that we had to find something to do. So when you take a cow historically and you process it, there was times where half the value of processing the cow came from the co-products, not the food. With BSE, what happened is you eliminated a big chunk of that value, but at the same time, you didn't sell the steaks for anymore. So you'd lost half, or not half, but a big chunk of what you could sell the cow for, or claim value from. So what happened is the price of meat went up in the stores. At the same time, the farmers got paid a lot less for the cow. And because you had BSE in your repository, it stops the trade internationally. So for a while, Japan would not accept Canadian beef. The U.S. would not accept Canadian beef. And part of it's a trade issue and part of it's a scientific purpose.
So then you have all this excess material. How is it being disposed of?
Well, the stuff that's potentially infected with the prion isn't the entire cow. You know, up until a certain age, they look at the brain and spinal column and some of those materials. So you're talking, depends on who you're talking to, about 20% of the cow is considered what we call specified risk material. This SRM, or specified risk material, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency took a zero risk policy, which means that material could not be exposed to any kind of food chain or the environment. So CFI gave approval for four disposal pathways. The first disposal pathway is probably the harshest, which is just incineration. Well, that's what was deployed at Cargill with the support of some government support. They set up an incineration facility in southern Alberta. They're the only one to do that in North America. The rest of it was option two, which is landfill. The problem with landfill is it doesn't destroy the prion necessarily, and that land could never be used again for agricultural production. Now, not to mention in North America, the amount of specified risk material generated is somewhere in the ballpark of 5,000 tons a week. So picture landfills with that much protein and rotting, decaying material is not a good environment. The other two options were thermal hydrolysis, which breaking it down at high temperature with water, or caustic. So this is adding a strong base and breaking it down at high temperature. So of those options, the hydrolysis ones had no established value. You destroy the material, maybe use it as fertilizer for the inorganics. The incineration, you're burning sulfur and nitrogen containing materials, got some energy, but it's not a great feedstock for that. And landfill isn't a great sustainable long-term solution. And so that's where the province started working with our lab and others to look at how do we address and create value from this byproduct stream. Clearly, we're not want to go to food with it, but what other options?
So what have you been looking at in terms of your research?
For the past now decade, with the support, initially it was the province and a group called PrionNet, which was a national NCE, followed by Alberta Prion Research Institute, or APRI, linked to now Alberta Innovates. We looked at a whole series of how do we use the hydrolysis methods we talked about. So the first thing we did is we aligned with CFIA to get our lab approved to do all this. It took about a year shutdown to reformat. We found ways after hydrolysis, which is a very harsh condition, breaking the protein right down, we started playing chemistry on ways to recombine those little peptides, we call them pieces of protein, back into things like plastic or composites, adhesives, and now flocculating agents. So one of the things we're looking at is, can we use this material to, for example, settle tailing ponds from mine storage or oil sand kind of applications. So it's a lot of chemistry looking at how to modify it for more industrial, non-food related use.
Are the prions destroyed though?
Yes. So much of the work before us with CFI showed that the hydrolysis would render the material safe. And in fact, we worked with Dr. Westaway at the Alberta Center for Prion and Protein Misfolding Diseases to actually look at the material we used, both just after hydrolysis and after chemical recombination, just to confirm that it wasn't infectious. So we actually did go through a couple of years study just confirming that the material was safe and inert.
So if you were converting it to plastics, what kind of plastics and what sort of products or industries would they be used in?
Well, although the material is completely safe, from a social license and public acceptance, we tried to steer away from like food packaging or anything like that. And we looked at a type of plastic that's called thermoset, which means it's actually cast permanently. It's not a melt reformable plastic. And so we were looking at industrial uses, structural materials. Some of it was, again, looking at phenol formaldehyde replacements in panel boards and wood products, kind of that terminal safe industrial use is the space we looked at there. And then some of the other stuff we looked at, like the foaming agents or flocculating agents as well, where we're looking at, again, using it to clean up something like oil spill. It's anticipated these materials are highly biodegradable. And so once put in the environment, and after we've hydrolyzed them, they will be chewed up in the environment. The initial protein is much more resistant.
And you also mentioned oil sands tailings. How would you use it there?
Well, one of the problems with the oil sand tailing ponds is they're not settling at the speed people would like them to. And the reclamation isn't just about getting the oil settled. It's about getting the clay particles to settle to the bottom so the water can be recovered and reused, and hopefully the site return to like a solid ground. To do that, you need to consolidate or push down the solid materials. And so a flocculating agent helps do that. It kind of binds things together and gets them to fall out of the water column and create kind of a solid surface underneath. And so working with NAIT or the Northern Albert Institute Technology, some of the oil sands research centers, we're looking at trying to adopt and do some chemistry on the proteins to make them good flocculating agents.
Are there any obstacles or challenges to this?
Like everything else in the research world, the obstacles are always we can do things in the lab, we get some proof of concept. There's an area of optimization where you got to try and get the perfect recipe. It's always hard to get funding to do that part of the work. And then you're trying to formulate a business case that will seek investment to do pilot plant and scale up. Very much like we did with some of the other technologies. We're kind of at that stage right now where we filed a bunch of patents on about four different types of applications. We've actually been awarded at national phase in many of these, so we actually hold the space. The next stage will come at getting investors and moving the corporate kind of development forward.
It sounds to me then that you see this has a lot of promise.
Well, the thing I like about it is going back to the beginning, if you're landfilling this material, it's a cost. So instead of the rendering industry selling it for profit, they're now looking at costs. Estimates are anywhere between $70 to $200 a ton to get rid of it. If we can create an industrial use for this material that reclaims value, I'm hoping we can drive value back into the entire agricultural chain from producers to processors to renderers. But to do that, we need to find high value applications at the end of the day.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the time today.